My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. On June 3rd, the New York Times broke the news of a long-awaited report on military videos of UAPs, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, a euphemism for UFOs. The Times shared that the report stated there was no evidence of alien technology, but could not rule this out either. Was this another attempt at official obfuscation of evidence that would establish once and for all that we are not alone in the universe? What does this say about the diligent work of researchers who have compiled a body of evidence that not only established we are not alone, but that humanity has been shaped and influenced by extraterrestrial beings since the beginning of time? Returning this week to Destination Unlimited, Paul Anthony Wallace is one of those diligent researchers whose groundbreaking best-selling book, Escaping from Eden, was hailed as this generation's Chariot of the Gods by George Noory. That book shared evidence that Genesis and other scriptural works were modified to hide the truth of humanity's creation at the hand of ETs. Paul Anthony Wallace is a popular speaker, researcher, and author of books on spirituality and mysticism. As a senior churchman, he served as church doctor, a trainer of pastors, and an archdeacon of the Anglican Church in Australia. Today, his work probes the world's mythologies for their insights into human origins, human potential, and our place in the cosmos. His website is paulanthonywallace.com, and he joins me this week to share his latest book, The Scars of Eden: Has Humanity Confused the Idea of God with Memories of E.T. Contact? Please join me in welcoming back to Destination Unlimited, Paul Anthony Wallace. Welcome, Paul.
G'day, Victor. It's so good to be with you again. Thanks for having me on your show.
And it's wonderful to have you back. Paul, let's start with the breaking news. What's your take on the long-awaited DNI Pentagon report that was just broken last week and the mixed message it delivered?
Yes. Well, for many, it may have come as a little bit of an anti-climax, seeing the leakage of that report in the New York Times, because there's been such a long build-up to this moment of hope for disclosure. I mean, not only in terms of decades of campaigning, but particularly since the New York Times broke the story of the Tic Tac encounter back in 2017. You could see there's been this building and building, because the Pentagon then came and authenticated the Tic Tac encounters. They've authenticated the pyramid-shaped UFO encounters. We've heard from naval personnel about those incidents. We've heard from Hamer Shedd, the former chief for space security for Israel, 27 years in that position. That brigadier general came out just before Christmas and talked about a covert government contact with an intergalactic federation. So all that was in the news. And then we heard from Alain Juillet, the former chief of French security, all sort of validating these stories. Chris Mellon, of course, in the background, nurturing this forward. And it all seemed to be moving towards the Senate intelligence briefings of later this month. But all the while we've been anticipating that, of course, there's been that bit of chatter of what are we expecting? Are they going to come clean? Are they going to say that there's been covert government contact? Are they going to say that the UAPs, UFOs we've been investigating are of ET origin? We thought that was already out of the bag with Eric Davis's statements about off-world vehicles not made on this earth. And so some might have thought, okay, it's going to go further. They're going to say we've been in contact. Some might have said it's going to go further. We're going to have far more declassification. There'll be more cases for us to look at. Others have been saying it's going to be a damp squib. Others have been saying, oh, they're going to hoik up the fear. They're going to leverage this so everyone thinks we're in imminent danger of invasion, and then they'll go to emergency powers and things like that. So there's been a whole spectrum of expectations, and then this gets leaked and it looks like nothing. What's interesting, though, is how much is already out, how much the Pentagon has already confirmed. So it looks like, in a way, we're back to the pre-1947 position, which is when the National Security Act came in that began the process of classifying UFO research, official UFO research, back to a position of saying we've been engaging with UFOs for 70 years. We've been investigating physical materials from crash retrievals from 70 years, and we don't know what they are. Well, 70 years on, that's really not credible. So I think, in a way, a damp squib of a report is basically throwing it back on the public to do the math. There's so much already out there that's been confirmed and authenticated. I think it simply invites us to join the dots and work out for ourselves whether we think it's the Russians, the Chinese, or a civilization off planet that is sending their craft and interacting with us. It's pretty difficult to really backpedal from information that's already been released and authenticated, but it looks like that's what they're doing.
Unbelievable, because even if they were trying to blame it on either Russian or Chinese technology, the speeds and G-forces that these things produced that were measured by the naval aviators and others are impossible for humans to withstand.
Well, absolutely. That's exactly right. And when you've got the former Assistant Secretary of Defense saying exactly that, that we have no idea where that technology comes from, you know full well, therefore, they're not talking about the Russians or the Chinese. If we've all seen now the footage of the naval pilots engaging with the Tic Tac craft in 2004, if for one moment we thought it was China who had invaded US airspace with technology like that, the response would have been completely different. And we all know it. The whole diplomatic setup of the world would have altered if we had for a moment thought that was China or Russia. So it is pretty obvious the moment you stop and think that we don't know who it is, which is sort of what the report is saying. Inconclusive is a way of saying we don't know who it is. And once the information is already out there from people like Jacques Vallée and Eric Davis, who are saying we're examining materials that were engineered in zero G by we don't know who, well, you don't have to do a lot of maths before you realize what we're actually talking about. But I think that's what they've done, just thrown it back on those who are interested, those who are paying attention to join the dots. And they've preferred that so that we're still in this sort of drip, drip, drip soft disclosure phase, rather than into the hard disclosure. And it seems that's the decision that's been taken.
Do you think that even so, it is this way, that there'll be more belief, that there'll be more credibility of witnesses and experiencers?
I very much hope so. And it certainly should be the case when you think of who has come forward in the last 4 years, so that we're hearing from people of the standing of Brigadier General Haim Ashed, the former chief of space security for Israel. That's a pretty authoritative position. Or from Alain Juillet, the former chief of French security. That's just one degree removed, if you think about it, from the person in authority making an official disclosure. It's only that one degree removed. And after you hear enough of that kind of statement from that kind of figure, it ought to be that you can go back to members of the public who say they've seen stuff and have filmed stuff and think again.
For those meeting you for the first time, let's give them the thumbnail sketch of your path and how you got involved with this research.
Yes, it's a path that seems to surprise a lot of people, because I've arrived onto this territory of researching ET contact in the present and in our ancestral past. Funny route, and it's been through Christian ministry. 33 years in Christian congregation-based ministry. I've worked as a theological educator, training pastors in the interpretation of ancient texts, the Bible in particular. I've worked as a church doctor, as an archdeacon for the Anglican Church. And in all that time, I've been wrestling with the Bible, teaching from the Bible, training people from the Bible. And there are anomalies in the stories that we tell from the Bible, which would catch anybody's attention reading through, which had caught my attention. And I'd always promised myself, when I had the time, I'll get back and drill down into some of these obvious questions. And we talked about them last time, but things like the "let us make," and people say, "Who's the us? Let us make humans to look like one of us or one of who?" And then there are conversations among the Elohim, that word that gets translated as God. And I thought, okay, I've got to get to the bottom of that. I just preached through the book of Genesis in my church in Victoria, and I realized I was skating around on the surface of it, that I was preaching from the current edit of those books. Now, anyone who has studied theology at degree level know there's a whole history to how those books have formed and where they've come from. And the moment you start looking at the sources and looking at, well, what were the stories before they were put into the current shape, it gets you very, very quickly into the territory of the Mesopotamian stories on the cuneiforms. And those stories turn out to be the basis of the Bible stories. But the Sumerian, Babylonian, Akkadian experiences on which the Bible stories are based are not stories about God. They are stories about sky people, or what we would call extraterrestrials. And as soon as I realized that, I realized there was a rabbit hole. I was just going to have to go down and visit these stories in their original form to find out what they told us.
What reception have you had to your work from religious people or people of faith? Have you won friends or lost friends?
Oh, overwhelmingly, I've won friends on balance. I have lost a few, I think, in that there seem to be a few, particularly professional colleagues, who are keeping a bit more of a distance because I think they've not processed what I'm talking about. A couple have said, "Let's stay friends, but I won't be reading your book," because they're actually, if I dare say, frightened of the conclusions they might reach if they actually run down that rabbit hole and read my research. But the overwhelming response has been positive from people, just people who are believers of one kind or another, or people in ministry, pastors, pastors in training, retired pastors who have come to me and said, "Thank you so much for putting this," I was going to say on the table, it's really back on the table, because what we're talking about was part of mainstream Christian conversation until about 144 AD, when the process began of making it a taboo. Well, hopefully the scars of Eden, escaping from Eden, are putting it back on the table, and people are saying, "Thank you for doing that," because I've seen that in the text as well, and I'm not allowed to talk to my pastor about it, talk about it at church, talk to my congregation about it, or because I've been pastoring people who've been experiencing close encounters, and how do I respond to that theologically or pastorally? There's a priest in the UK I'm in contact with who's been involved in paranormal ministry in the last two dioceses that they've worked for. And paranormal ministry in the context of church generally means things like entity removal, so deliverance ministry, exorcisms, things like that. But they've been involved in parishes where they've had to respond to parishioners who've had close encounters or reported close encounters with extraterrestrial entities. And so they've gone to the leader of the paranormal ministry teams, which is very often the bishop, and have said, "We need to develop a response to parishioners who have these experiences." And the bishop has said, "You're absolutely right. Please never mention it again." And so once that's happened, where do you go? And then another big demographic who have reached out to me since Escaping from Eden was published is people in who are veterans of war. And often people who are in active service don't identify themselves that way, but I hear from a lot of people who are ex-military, who are veterans of war, and in particular, soldiers airmen who have gone, and women who have gone into Afghanistan and Iraq in 2003, and suddenly they realize that the conflict they're involved with has so many layers. They're all the public layers as to why they've gone in. And then they go in and they find their particular unit is involved in an archaeological mission to retrieve artifacts, return them to the US. And what are they? What do they have to do with? And very quickly, those veterans of war are, first of all, deeply disturbed by discovering they're laying their lives on the line for something they don't know what it is. They've gone in thinking that they are risking their life in order to save the lives of Kurdish people, and it turns out no, save the lives of the world by rescuing us from weapons of mass destruction. No, not your unit. Save Iraq by effecting regime change. No, not your unit. Your unit is retrieving objects that have to do with our earliest human narratives on the planet that have to do with human origins. Well, obviously, they come back from that wanting to find out what it's all about. And so that takes them to the Mesopotamian tablets and the narratives there. And then that brings them to me because they need to process what has happened to them. It's not just about understanding the world we live in or understanding history, but what is going on now? What are our wars about? And why is it so pressing an issue in 2021? And so all that is in the mix. And many of those people are people of faith as well. And what it's done for them is it's shaken them out of their old worldview and brought them into a place of trying to work out, well, what is this universe I'm living in? And so the thing probably that unites everyone who contacts me is they're on a journey like that. They're trying to find out what's going on? What's going on with them? What happened to them in the past? What's happening in the present? How does a populated universe fit with the faith that they've held? And they're busy trying to do all that maths. And so a lot of the coaching I do is with people who are doing that kind of processing.
Which kind of leads to the question, are faith and this work mutually exclusive?
Well, that's very often the question people are wrestling with because something has woken them up to a populated universe, either a close encounter or something they've, but even just following the news in the last few years might have woken them up to that. And the next question is, what does this do to my relationship with God or to my faith? Are they mutually incompatible? And what I found in my research for escaping from Eden and the scars of Eden is that you go back to the beginning of Christianity, and you will find leading theologians who held the two together, a belief in God and a belief that there were ET interventions in our evolution as a species. All that was part of their belief, not mutually exclusive at all. But it was only as orthodoxy narrowed down and then got militarized by the empire that these more interesting aspects got silenced, shut down, and literally buried in the desert so that the idea of them and the story of them wouldn't be completely lost. And you can see that same forgetting and narrowing down happening through the formation of the Hebrew canon, where we've got the earliest stories that are about the Elohim, the sky people, the ETs, and then translation choices get made to obscure that aspect of the story, make it all look like a seamless story of God. And there are parallel experiences. I talk about this in the Scars of Eden, parallel experiences in other cultures where, say, the empire has gone in, the Spanish or the Portuguese or the Brits or the Dutch. And they have shut down all the other stories of beginnings so that there's only room for the Catholic orthodoxy of the day. But what happens is that that information never entirely goes away. It gets suppressed, it gets hidden, and then it keeps resurfacing. So there's this continual remembering of these other stories and these other narratives that our ancestors curated. It's the process I'm interested in.
And we're going to touch upon that in the next segment, but I want to ask you about last year's Escaping from Eden. For those listeners who are not familiar with it, please share the premise and your findings. And you had mentioned about the plural, let us, Elohim being a plural word in Hebrew. Please explain what else you found.
Well, the exercise that began Escaping from Eden was to go to this anomalous word Elohim, which is a masculine plural form word that gets translated as God, but exhibits all these plural behaviors. I mean, you've got the wars of the Elohim in the Hebrew scriptures, in which thousands of humans are killed in the conflict among the Elohim. So it becomes clear pretty quickly you're dealing with plural entities. So the exercise was, let's reread these stories with Elohim in the plural. Let's go back before the 6th century BCE edit to the earlier form of the stories and see what they look like. So I do that in Escaping from Eden. It becomes clear immediately that you're looking at the summary form of the Mesopotamian narratives from out of Sumeria, Babylonia, Arcadia, and Syria, and those narratives are about ETs. And then I found that these stories of humanity evolving on the planet and then being adapted, modified, genetically re-engineered by an ET colonizing force, that story repeats in cultures all around the world. You can go to Africa, you can go to India, you can go to the Norse countries, Celtic countries, South America, Mesoamerica, Native North America, Aboriginal Australian. You go anywhere you like on the planet, and there will be an iteration of that story. And when you see the correlations, and sometimes the incredibly precise correlations among those stories, you have to listen to them differently. Because some people will read mythology as if it's like pure fable, it's just a fiction that's been invented. So you've got to work out, why has exactly the same fiction been invented? You might want to read it in a fundamentalist way. To my mind, that doesn't quite work either. If you're going to take everything as a diary entry, then things sort of clunk up a bit. But to see the correlations, the question that raises for me is, what is the memory that this story was crafted to preserve? And if I go at the mythologies that way, it is the same picture that emerges. And sometimes it's the same visual memory that's being described. So many of them talk about a time when our planet was devastated by some kind of cataclysm. And that's when they remember the ET visitors turning up and re-terraforming the planet. Mm. And the way it's described, it is very clearly a visual memory that's being reported. It's not that a document or a story has gone around the planet and been retold in Chinese whispers. They're using different metaphor, different language, to report the same visual thing. And that's what you begin picking up when you read the mythologies side by side. And you realize this is a very primitive, ancient memory in which our ancestors saw something, and then they told their children what they saw, and they told their children what they saw. And they used the imagery that was familiar to them so that that memory could be preserved, so that thousands of years later, people could hear that imagery and say, I think I know what's being described.
And we're going to go into that deeper in our next segment. My guest is Paul Wallace. We're going to be talking about his brand new book, The Scars of Eden, Has Humanity Confused Memories of ET Contact with the Idea of God? Paul, please tell our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you.
Sure. For Escaping from Eden and The Scars of Eden, you can go to Amazon, Kindle, Barnes & Noble, Hive, Book Depository, wherever books are sold, get your copy there. And if you want to get into conversation with me, you can go to the Paul Wallace channel on YouTube or the Fifth Kind TV, or my website is paulanthonywallace.com.
And we'll be back with more of Paul after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Paul Anthony Wallace. We're talking about his book, The Scars of Eden. Has humanity confused memories of ET contact with the idea of God? And before we continue with the new book, I just want to share that George Nouri, the host of Coast to Coast AM and Beyond Belief, called his last book, Escape from Eden, This Generation's Chariot of the Gods. Pretty good press with that one.
I was blown away when George said that on Coast to Coast. I was thrilled to hear it because that's such a significant book. That was an absolute game changer. It broke the taboo on the question of ET involvement in the human story. It had been sort of talked a little bit about at an academic level, but it wasn't mainstream conversation until Eric von Daniken came forward with Chariots of the Gods. And I think every generation needs these taboo-busting books. I very much hope The Scars of Eden will do that for a new generation. So when George Nouri said, Escaping from Eden, this generation's Chariots of the Gods, I was blown away, absolutely thrilled, and thought, yes, bring it on. Let's let's bust this taboo. Let's get this talked about with dinner tables, in school playgrounds. We need to be having these conversations. And why I'm not too dismayed by, we began by talking about the damp squib of a report that it looks like is going to come out with the Senate intelligence briefings. At the very least, it means it's in the news. People are talking about it.
Absolutely.
And it's easier for people to say, well, actually, this is what I think. Or even, actually, I've had this experience, which is why I think this. And I think the more conversation we can have like that, the better, because it enables us to listen to one another and understand that the experience of sightings and close encounters is far more prevalent than we have allowed, because there's been such a taboo and such a fear of ridicule over the whole topic. People have not come forward, but I've now come to the belief through the volume of people contacting me that there wouldn't be a friendship circle or a family circle anywhere that wouldn't have an experiencer in it. And I think if you asked your friendship circle, you know, after a couple of beers, have you ever experienced anything that you couldn't explain? I reckon every individual would have a story. And if we could listen to each other's stories of that kind, then a coherent picture begins to build up. And it has to do with, we are not alone.
Absolutely. And what's been happening is all of these events of the last few years have put this into mainstream media, really mainstream media. I'm talking about 60 Minutes here on CBS and in the United States and elsewhere around the world. So it's being reported and it's not being covered up. And I think that's going to be an entry for us.
Yes, definitely.
So the new book was actually praised by Eric von Daniken. He has some very nice things to say about it. The new book is called The Scars of Eden. It takes us deeper into the ancestral narratives and into the experience of witnesses and experts around the world. What motivated you to go deeper and take us further down the rabbit hole?
Well, one thing I've already mentioned, and that was the phenomenal response to Escaping from Eden that very quickly became an international bestseller. And every week I'm contacted by people, most weeks it's every day, by people who had these experiences that have dislodged them from their previous worldview, and they're now kind of processing what it means to be in a populated universe. So particularly the veterans of war who said, I'm trying to understand what my unit was doing, what the implications are for who we are as a species that flow from these stories that these artifacts relate to. And I've really been moved by compassion by people who are in that kind of a place, just trying to get their head around it all. But there's another reason I realized I had to move forward in this area and produce The Scars of Eden. And that's because when I was preparing for Escaping from Eden to come out, I suddenly realized I was going to have to tell my parents-in-law what my new book was about. And they are devout Christians of Baptist, Pentecostal background. They're from Ghana. And I thought, wow, they actually might find my book a bit confronting. I mean, Escaping from Eden, the subtitle is, does Genesis teach that the human race was created by God or engineered by ETs? And just the fact that I'm considering it could be engineered by ETs is very confronting to some people. And there is small proportion of people who contact me to tell me how unacceptable that view is. And I thought, oh dear, I hope that's not going to be my parents-in-law. So they came and stayed for the weekend, and we had some lovely food and some lovely drink. And when everyone was relaxed, I thought, okay, now might be a good moment to tell them. So I said, Patience Coldfield, let me tell you about this new book I've got coming out. And I just ran through what we've run through in our conversation today. So I had no idea how they would respond. They had their poker faces on, and I just had to get through my speech. And then when I finished, Kofi, my father-in-law, leant back in his seat and said, Paul, a penny has dropped. And what he meant by that was all those anomalies, all those things that didn't make sense in the stories from the Bible that he'd wrestled with for years had suddenly resolved. And then my mother-in-law leant forward and said, Paul, we already know this story. She said, in Ghana, we know the Christian answers to the great questions of life. We know the modern scientific answers. We get taught them at school. But there is another folkloric knowledge that we are not alone on the planet. Ghanaians know that there is another presence on planet Earth that interacts with human beings and sometimes abducts human beings. And in fact, we are very close to another family that had that experience. And she went on to tell me the story of this family close to ours, whose daughter went missing for 3 years, went missing from the beach at Anloga in the Keta district of the Volta region of Ghana, was gone for 3 years. And when she reappeared 3 years later, she found herself on the beach, found her way back to her family home. They were absolutely thrilled she had returned and just did their best to help her feel safe again and let her tell her story at her own rate. They assumed what had happened was she had been kidnapped, that it was slave trafficking, sex trafficking, a failed elopement, something like that. But what they didn't understand was why she couldn't have contacted them in 3 years. And it took a long time before she told them the whole story. And it was only on pleading from her mum that she finally opened up, and she gave all the details. And she said, yes, I was taken from the beach. The reason I couldn't contact you is because I was held in a base where there were no devices I could use to contact you. It was an underwater base, so I couldn't get out. I was used to produce children. And then the final line, the people who held me were not human. And then she said they were Mami Water. And when she said that, the parents understood what she was telling them. They'd never expected to hear that from their daughter, but they knew the Mami Water story. And that is precisely the story she had told, that there's another presence that looks human but is not human, that is taking humans for hybridization. Now, my jaw dropped. I had no idea that this was a concept widely known in Ghana, let alone that this had happened to people we knew. That sent me down another rabbit hole, and I realized that story in every single detail repeats in cultures all around the world. Go to Kenya, they'll tell you about the Mahurani. Listen to Swahili-speaking peoples, they'll tell you about the genie. You can go to the southern cone of South Africa, all up the western seaboard of Africa, into the Caribbean, Brazil, Cuba, Haiti, go as far east as the Philippines, where they've got language that exists only to tell this story. That language has its roots in India. You can go into Europe, and by the time I was in Europe, I was learning that the whole of Europe is named after an abductee, Europa, was the daughter of a king of Phoenicia. She was abducted from the beach. She was forced to have three hybrid children. One of them was Minos, the progenitor of the Minoan culture. Now, in Greece, that's taught as history, not as myth or fable. That's the beginning of Europe. And then you can go from there into the Celtic-speaking countries, go to Scotland, Wales, Ireland. They have that same story, all the same details, taken for a period, underwater bases, used for hybridization, returned later. And very often the people are not taken by force. They're enticed in with promises of, we'll make you cleverer, we'll make you healthier, we will return you. You're going to have a wonderful time. And sure enough, when people come back, I know particularly in Kenya, when people reappear after 3 years and they say, I was taken by the Maharani, actually, they're quite nice. That's not a story that's well received at all. You are likely to be medicated if you say that, or taken to your pastor to have a demon cast out of you. But that is nevertheless the experience that people are reporting. And once again, when you see the correlations, you begin taking it a little bit more seriously and asking the question, what is going on? I was very surprised by the time I got to Scotland in my explorations to discover the work of Robert Kirk, who was a Presbyterian minister who went to the parish of Aberfoyle. And you might know Presbyterians are generally pretty conservative theologically, but he went to that parish and he listened to what the locals had to tell him about their lives there. And after a few years there, he realized he had to write a book about the picture that was emerging, and it was called The Secret Commonwealth, in which he argued that there's a non-human presence on planet Earth that's not only abducting people for hybridization, but has a hands-on involvement in human progress at a covert government level. That book was, it was around 1600 that was published. And this was another moment where my jaw dropped and I thought, this has been known, this has been written about for all this time, and yet generation after generation, we re-forget the story, so that when somebody comes forward in 2021 and says, I was abducted by aliens, we laugh as if we'd never heard the like before. I discovered in my research, the like has been told us for thousands of years by every culture all around the planet.
Which leads to the question, why would advanced species have any interest in planet Earth, human beings, or hybridization?
It's a fascinating question. My start point there is to go right back to the Bible, to Genesis 6, and any Bible reader, that's probably their first awareness of the whole idea of alien abduction, because in Genesis 6, you've got these entities called the Bene Elohim, the ones like the powerful ones. So that implies it's the second wave of ETs we're being told about in that story. And what the Bene Elohim did was, it says they saw the human females and said, wow, they're gorgeous. Let's have some of that in our gene pool. And that's how the story goes. Now, I don't know exactly what they had in mind other than they're beautiful, but it may have been that there's something beautiful about the particular blend of Homo sapiens, the animal strength, the mammal emotion, the higher consciousness that makes us quite a special species in the great mix of a populated universe. And it may be that it's because we are special that we get that kind of attention. But it may also be that there are neighbors in the cosmos who don't, for instance, have the robust physicality that we have, and they want some of that in their gene pool. They may be in a fading species where there's just not enough in their gene pool to keep going. There's another possibility that they're adapting because they want to live here, and so they need to be a bit more like us. And when you start listening to the narratives, ancient and modern, of hybridization, it suggests there's a whole spectrum of reasons why it might be happening. There's the flattering end of the spectrum. We're awesome. They want some of us in their gene pool. And the Mammy Water story is that from Ghana. It says they want a new strain of Mammy Water people that are more like the humans. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got people with very harrowing experiences of being taken, experimented on, and if you read a book like Harvest by G.L. Davies, that's a really nightmarish vision of what might be going on. It's Absolutely. Very possible different demographics are here for different reasons and for different things, but hybridization is a part of the story of a number of these groups. And our cultures have memorialized that and told that story for generations.
My guest is Paul Anthony Wallace. His new book, The Scars of Eden, has humanity confused memories of ET contact with the idea of God. We'll be back with more of Paul after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going OM? My passion is sifting through information, research and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Right now, our country feels divided, but there's a place where people are coming together.
I gotta tell you, I was nervous to talk to someone so different than me.
Me too, but I'm glad we are.
Love Has No Labels and One Small Step are helping people with different political views, beliefs, and life experiences come together through conversation, and it feels good.
Wow, your story is so...
Interesting?
Yeah.
When people actually sit down, talk, and listen to one another, they can break down boundaries and connect as human beings. At lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep, you can listen to amazing, life-changing conversations and find simple tools to start a conversation of your own.
I know one thing. This conversation gives me hope.
It gives me a lot of hope, too.
Take a step toward bringing our country and your community together by having the courage to start a conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Paul Anthony Wallace. His book, The Scars of Eden, has humanity confused memories of ET contact with the idea of God. Paul, the title is Scars of Eden. What are the scars?
I argue that there are things in our geopolitics that have their roots in ET interventions in our development as a species. We have so many culture wars happening in the 21st century, wars around access to water, access to food, farming wars, the war between traditional, rotational, combination organic farming and industrial scale GM petrochemical farming. We've got wars around information, wars around education, wars around population control, wars around models of leadership. And in The Scars of Eden, I point out that those are all the same conflicts that our ancestors identified when they talked about the powerful ones conflicting with one another over how Project Earth should be managed. Now, just the fact that it's the same stories, the same struggles, the same issues ought to catch our attention. When we read a number of cultures talking about devices or substances being released into the environment in order to dumb humans down, the more often we repeat that story, the more often I think that's a story about the present and a warning about the present than a story about the past. If I go back to that farming, for instance, issue, this conflict is so live in the 21st century. We are seeing an almost militarized clash between those two models of farming. The Scars of Eden explores the possibility that the traditional, rotational, combinational, organic approach to farming came from an ET intervention in our development as a species tens of thousands of years ago. If you listen to some of the Native American story and some of the Aboriginal Australian story, they will talk about visitors from the stars coming and teaching their ancestors how to live in harmony with the land, what plants they could cultivate, what are good for foods, what are good for medicines, teaching them the rudiments of sanitation and the principles of living at a higher than subsistence level. That's the roots of that tradition of farming, I believe. And then you go to Karakadag, to the Fertile Crescent. There are stories that seem to date from about 10,000 years ago that relate to this other tradition, how to genetically modify crops so that you can farm on an industrial scale. And those lessons go alongside the formation of money systems, banking systems, legal systems, and everything that popped up fully formed in the ancient Sumerian culture. Those two models of how to live on the planet have been on a collision course for 10,000 years, and we're seeing quite a clash of it in 2021. And I think we can't understand why that's happening or the force of it or who the stakeholders are until we realize that that's a story that goes back to our origins and even off planet. Even our whole concepts of leadership, I believe, date from a time when we were governed by non-human entities. When people talk about strong leadership, I mean, I can remember, I won't mention any names, but I can remember a few years ago, a new prime minister was appointed in Great Britain, and he came along saying, you're all going to have to work much, much harder for far, far less, with far less resources, and you're going to struggle far more. And a lot of people listened to that and said, oh, great, strong leadership. And I thought, why do people regard compassionless leadership as strong? If a leader comes along and says, we're going to find a solution to this and we're going to keep the conversation open until we've heard from everyone this affects, and then we're going to bring forward a policy that is going to bring the maximum benefit to the maximum number of people, people regard that as weak leadership because that decision is going to take longer. Why are we biased to seeing compassionless, I'm going to force this through and I don't care who it hurts? Why do we regard that as strong leadership? The Scars of Eden argues it's because our earliest experience of governance was of non-human entities with no empathy towards us calling all the shots. There are other scars in our psyche. Once you go to ancestral memory that talks about very violent entities landing on the planet and genociding our ancestors and tell them, oh, that's God, you'd better stay on the right side of him, you suddenly introduced a narrative that's going to traumatize and intimidate every generation of human beings from that time to this. And unfortunately, we have a lot of religion that is on that footing. Don't offend God, because he will genocide us if we get it. He'll send another flood. He'll burn us up like he did the 70,000 in the Old Testament. All that is really psychologically abusive storytelling, and it comes from a confusion about these ancient experiences. So many of the stories that overlap in narratives around the world are stories of traumas that our ancestors experienced. And if you start telling people those traumas were good, that was a loving God who did that unconscionable thing, you are literally playing with people's minds and their mental health. And so that's another of the scars of Eden. So we're talking geopolitics, we're talking psychology, we're talking leadership and all the culture wars of today. And the scars of Eden reframes that and says, take another look at all of that in the light of where we've come from and how these things got set up.
And we look at where we are now, the issues around the world, issues here in the United States of egregious racism, of mass shootings, of all of these activities that are so horrendous taking place. Where do you think we are as a species right now?
Well, I think we're very confused still. I think if you have an image of God which is violent and compassionless, which is where you get to if you translate Elohim as God, then you can justify any atrocity. And that is historically what has happened. Empires have committed the most appalling atrocities and genocides in the name of God because their God is a violent God. And until we can unravel all of that and say God is the source of the cosmos and everything in it, the one in whom we all live and move and have our being, that is a story of non-separation and unity, and you can't justify any atrocity if that's your image of God. And so I want to separate that from all these stories of traumas with which we've justified abuses throughout the ages. So at the very least, I hope the Scars of Eden will help people to do that. I also think that when you wake up to the realization that we've got company, and that that company is sometimes benevolent, sometimes malevolent, that some of that company is entities like us, they're just from other planets, but that some of that company might be archonic entities, energy-based beings that are parasitic off negative emotion, that actually feed off aggression, that feed off anxiety, that feed off depression, then I hope that can be a real signal to us to be a little bit more emotionally intelligent, not to be manipulated by powers, human or otherwise, to keep us in a place of anxiety and anger. I think the moment you realize there are powers that want you angry, that want you full of hate, that want you fearful, because then they can either feed off you or manipulate you, it ought to make you more deliberate about what emotional state you allow yourself to go into. And we've seen so much manipulation in the last few years to polarize people against each other, to stir up xenophobia, to stir up racism, and to stir up the fear of racism, violence, warfare. I think we need to get wise to that, because if we can be more emotionally intelligent as people, we won't have demagogues leading us. We won't have xenophobes leading us, because it just won't work. So for all those reasons, I think we need to smarten up.
What do you hope that people will take away from The Scars of Eden?
Well, one of the big takeaways is I want people to get talking and listening. I share some of my own experiences in the book, which are not dramatic experiences. I don't have a Whitney Strieber type experience or a Travis Walton type experience of my own to report. My experiences are really vague. I'm not quite sure what happened. Something happened. I can't get my head around it. And if people can share their stories like that and listen without ridicule, then I think we're in a grassroots wave of disclosure. It doesn't matter what Senate intelligence briefings reveal. You will hear from your own friends and family circle that we're not alone on the planet, and begin to think through the implications of that, if we can listen to one another in that way. And that's the real call that I put out in the skies of Eden.
Listening, a precious and sacred gift that we need to share with one another. Absolutely. So the first book was called Escape from Eden. This one, Scars of Eden. What's next?
I won't reveal the title, but what I'll tell you is that where I'm being led is I want to look at the question of what other information, what other knowledge was buried along with our ancestors' memories of ET contact. And where I'm being led to is, what is the information that's revealed when people do traditional initiations around the world, particularly initiations in Africa, Aboriginal Australia, Native America, and also there's a powerful folklore in the Philippines. And I'm in contact with people who are part of all those cultures and in conversations that are going to lead to the sequel to The Scars of Eden.
I was hoping you were going to write Return to Eden.
Well, maybe further down the track.
Absolutely. My guest, Paul Anthony Wallace's new book, The Scars of Eden. Paul, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Sure. Go to the Paul Wallace channel on YouTube and to the Fifth Kind TV. Go to Amazon, Kindle, Barnes & Noble, Book Depository, Hive, wherever books are sold. Get hold of my books and I will dialogue with you on these YouTube channels. And if you go to paulanthonywallace.com, Anthony with an H, Wallace, W-A-L-L-I-S, paulanthonywallace.com, you can reach me through my website as well.
And I hope that when you do your next book about initiations, you come back and we can do some self-initiation.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
It's
and then
time.
That'll be in the book, too. Thank
it's
you, Victor.
Time. Thank you, Paul. And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the voice, Furman. Have a wonderful week.